All across America and around the world, this is Veterans Radio.
This is Veterans Radio.
And now, your host for today's program, Dale Thronberry.
Hey, and welcome to Veterans Radio. My name is Dale Thronberry, a CW-2 helicopter pilot in Vietnam, 1969. Wow, that's a long time ago. I should probably stop that introduction. I keep thinking it adds to my credibility a little bit for doing this program. So anyway, welcome to our monthly benefits program. I'm really excited to have you all listening in. So if you have a question for our experts, you can give us a call here at 734-822-1600. That's 734-822-1600. We are going to be talking with a doctor. Imagine that. Dr. Jason Vassie, who is with the VA at VA Boston Healthcare System. And we're going to be talking about prostate cancer and what the VA is doing and some of the research that he has been involved with. We've also got General Falzone, Carol Ann Falzone will be here to answer any of your benefit questions. If you have any, just call that number I just gave you. And of course, if you have any questions about anything going on our program, we really appreciate your contacting us and letting us know what is happening. A couple of announcements that I did want to get in before we talk about prostate cancer. Anyway, all right. Two big events coming up. Number one is here locally in the Ann Arbor, Ypsilanti, Michigan area is Thunder Over Michigan. Thunder Over Michigan is coming up on June 20th to 22nd at the Willow Run Airport in Ypsilanti, Michigan. For those of you that have been around this area for a while, this is a really, really great air show. And this year it's highlighted by the U.S. Navy. Blue Angels are going to be there putting on, I think it's four performances on the Saturday and Sunday. Obviously, if you like airplanes, this is the place to be on that weekend. They've got the Blue Angels. They've got the C-130 Fat Albert. They've got Air Force the F-22 Raptor Demonstration Team, C-17 Globemaster, KC-135 Stratotanker. They've got a guy who does skywriting called Ghost Rider Air Show. They got Skip Stewart. And what Skip does is he's a acrobatic pilot, and he does things where he defies gravity with airplanes. And all of these things are available to you. All you've got to go to is thunderovermichigan.org. to get the tickets and find out all about the arrangements that need to be made. But this is a great, great opportunity for you to see some vintage aircraft. They have always a nice, great static display of aircraft out there. And I think it's really worthwhile. And this is one of our great local attractions for veterans that I really encourage you to write it down in your calendar. Again, that's June 20th through 22nd, thunderovermichigan.org. Check it out. The other thing that I want you to be aware of course, is to save the date. Save the date. Here we go. Save the date for Radio on the River. It's our fourth fundraiser for Radio on the River, and it's going to be Sunday, September 28th, and it's going to be out at Freedom River this year. So if you want to find out more about Freedom River, it's freedomriver.org. And it's a great organization. They have a beautiful facility out in Pinckney, Michigan, where we've got space for everything, lots of space. It's going to be available to everybody. We're going to have music. We're going to have storytellers. We're going to have food. Food's always important, right? And we've got raffles with all kinds of gifts that we're going to be raffling off. And speaking of airplanes, we're going to have the UH-1 Huey from the Michigan Flight Museum is going to be there for giving you a chance for rides, and the tickets for the rides are separate, but it's going to be out there as a static display for a while too. So all of this is going to take place on Sunday, September 28th of this year. This is our only fundraiser of the year, and we encourage you to go to our website. The information is there for you, and as we get closer, we'll start talking about how you can get tickets and so on and so forth. But we really want you to do that. So you've got an opportunity here. You've got airplanes going off all over the place on June 20th to 22nd. here locally in Ypsilanti, Michigan. And then September 28th, we're going to be out at Freedom River, and you're going to be able to get a ride on a Huey. Who knows? Maybe they'll let me at the controls. That would be really cool. So that's all I got for coming attractions. So before we get into the program, we got to thank our sponsors, because again, without our sponsors and without you, we could never be on the air like we do, keep telling these stories. We've been doing this now since November of 2003. Wow, 2003. It's a lot of stories, but there are so many more to go. All of you veterans out there, you all have a story to tell, and we want to help you tell that story and get as many of them out there as we possibly can. So in order to thank these people, we start off with Legal Help for Veterans. Legal Help for Veterans specializes in veterans' disability claims. Give Legal Help for Veterans a call at 800-693-4800 or go to their website, legalhelpforveterans.com. The National Veterans Business Development Council, better known as NVBDC, is the nation's leading third-party authority for certification of veteran-owned businesses. For more information, go to their website, nvbdc.org, or give them a call at 888-237-8433. We talk about NVBDC quite often on this program, and there are two reasons. Number one, they're a great supporter of Veterans Radio. And the second thing is, if you are a veteran-owned business, you need to be certified in order to do business with the federal government or with many contractors out there. And that means that you have to certify that you are really a veteran-owned business. So these are the folks to do that. Again, that's NVBDC.org. PuroClean, known as the paramedics of property damage, East PuroClean office is independently owned and operated. In fact, PuroClean is one of the nation's leading restoration franchise programs, and they give a 25% off fee for all veterans. So, pretty cool. So, for more information, go to puroclean.com. The Charles S. Kettles VA Medical Center here in Ann Arbor, Michigan. For more information, go to va.gov/AnnArborHealthcare. And finally, the Irwin Prescorn American Legion Post 46 and the Charles S. Kettles Vietnam Veterans of America Chapter 310, both of Ann Arbor, Michigan. If you'd like to support Veterans Radio, and we hope that you really do like to do that, we'd like you to go to our website, veteransradio.org, and click on the donate button. Thank you in advance. We really appreciate your ongoing support. So joining me now, as I mentioned earlier on, is we're going to talk. Now, we talk all about this research and things that the VA does, and this is just kind of a quick aside on my part, is that, you know, we've got great medical facilities, we've got great benefit programs, but one of the main things that the VA does is research. And we got to make sure that we keep the funding coming in so we can keep doing all this research. So joining me on the line right now is Dr. Jason Vassy. Dr. Vassy is a doctor and medical researcher with the Harvard Medical School and the VA Boston Healthcare Center. According to this document, it says he cares for patients as a primary care physician, studies how to use genetic information to improve medical care. For the past 10 years, he has led the Genome to Veterans Research Program. I'm going to get into that one, which looks at how genetic testing can help doctors choose safer, more effective treatments for individuals and provide a more accurate understanding of someone's disease risk. Dr. Vassy also worked with patients in large studies like the Million Veteran Program and is a lead researcher for the VA's All of Us Research Program. So without further ado, Dr. Vassy, welcome to Veterans Radio.
Well, Dale, thanks so much. It's an honor to be here and get to talk to your audience about some of the work we do.
Well, I'm really excited to talk to you because, you know, some of the chaos that's going on out there and misinformation is that we want to make sure that the VA does keep getting their research funding because of all the wonderful things that they do. I know, you know, if you're up in the Boston area, I know that that's a world-class institution, much like ours here in Ann Arbor with its affiliation with the research that's done at the University of Michigan. So, So tell me what it is that you're up to up there. It sounds really interesting.
Yeah. So in general, I wear two hats. One, I'm a primary care doctor for veterans. So I have a primary care clinic at the Jamaica Plain campus of the VA Boston Healthcare System. So I see veterans in my primary care clinic there. But as you mentioned, I'm also a researcher. And both of those hats kind of inform the other. So me taking care of patients on the front lines day to day informs the research I do. And then I think the research I do also then helps me bring some of that insight back into the clinic and how I take care of veterans also. So it's kind of a nice, it's kind of a hand in hand, one informing the other. So it's a really privileged place to be and very exciting too. The overall theme of my research is we've heard a lot about kind of the genetic revolution or the genomic revolution. We've learned a lot about the human genome over the last 20 years. But I think many patients are still probably wondering, when is that going to trickle down to the way my doctor takes care of me? Where does it make a difference in my healthcare? And when am I going to start seeing maybe some of the benefits of that? So I wear my kind of excited in genomics research hat, but also my really practical where the rubber meets the road primary care doctor hat to kind of figure out how do we design the studies to figure out where genetic testing is appropriate to actually improve outcomes, specifically for veterans, since that's where I work. And so I'm here today primarily to tell you about a prostate cancer clinical trial that we're doing. Mm-hmm. But for the last 15 years, I've been working in this area of bringing genetics or genomics where appropriate to primary care, and specifically the care of veterans.
Could you explain that a little bit to me, you know, what the Genomes to Veterans Research Program is?
Yes, it's essentially the team I lead that conducts these studies that I've been in charge of. So one of them is the PROGRESS study that we'll talk about. There have been others. So there's been, I do some work in the Million Veteran Program, which your audience might be familiar with. And I'll tell you more about that because that has actually informed our prostate cancer study. I've also led clinical trials of pharmacogenetic testing. And so you might be able to guess from the name, pharmaco is medication and genetics. So that means how does your body's own DNA influence how a particular drug might work or not work for you, which might be different from the general population based on your genetics. So I've led some clinical trials in that work. Other types of screening studies for other genetic diseases, all of this with the theme of how do we take these ideas from very kind of cutting edge, but ivory tower perhaps ideas, and actually bring it to the real world of primary care. And so prostate cancer is just one of those examples. The Genomes to Veterans Research Program is my team of other scientists, research assistants, data analysts, project managers who help me run these studies, all of them within the VA.
Wow. I don't think that the public and many of the veterans out there probably aren't aware of all the research that is going on in the various VA hospitals across the country.
Yeah, and that's why I'm grateful for this opportunity today to come to share with your audience about one study that we're doing. But you're right. I think, you might be aware that the VA just celebrated its 100th year anniversary of its research program. You know, phenomenal when you think about that. 1925 is when VA began realizing we not only do we need to take care of veterans, but we are uniquely positioned to do the research to help take care of them better. Mm-hmm. So things like the nicotine patch, the first successful liver transplant, hundreds of other medical innovations occurred because of VA research, actually funded by VA, done at VA research facilities by VA investigators. So it is, I don't know if it's our kind of the U.S.'s best kept secret or not, but I'm here to get the word out at least about this one clinical trial that I'm leading. Okay. But I'm one of hundreds of others of investigators in the VA doing similar work.
All right, let's get into your latest research project then.
Sure. Well, so prostate cancer is a big concern for the VA. Prostate cancer is the most common cancer among men. The prostate is a small organ, doesn't really do much except just kind of sit there like under your bladder, but it is prone to developing cancer. And there is kind of run-of-the-mill low-grade prostate cancer that is very common, and that we often say people will die with instead of die from, because it's not serious, it doesn't spread. But if you looked at the cells under the microscope, technically they're cancer cells, but they can be very quiet and stay dormant for years. Then there's really aggressive prostate cancer that can spread really quickly to other parts of the body, cause a lot of pain, cause a lot of disability, and ultimately lead to death. And right now, even in 2025, we don't have great screening tests to be able to identify which men are at risk for going on to develop prostate cancer in the first place, let alone which men are likely to go on to develop this high risk kind of aggressive prostate cancer. So that's different from other cancers that we screen for. Colorectal cancer, for example, we know that starting at age 45, everyone should be screened for colorectal cancer, either with a colonoscopy or with an annual blood stool test or another similar technology. We have pretty well-established guidelines for that. Similarly, for breast cancer, annual or biannual mammograms, we routinely recommend for women. Prostate cancer, we don't have a great screening test for. We have the PSA blood test. And so that's the most common, that is the test we have to screen for it. But a lot of men who go on to develop prostate cancer might have normal PSA values, or a lot of men who don't have prostate cancer have a high PSA value in their blood, and then end up going through unnecessary tests and procedures, maybe even a prostate biopsy, to show that, no, they didn't in fact have cancer. So we don't have great ways of identifying men who are at high risk for prostate cancer, and we don't have a great screening test for it. So that's kind of the problem here in primary care when we're talking to men about how to manage their risk of prostate cancer. So, you know, as I said, my interest is when we've invested a lot in the last 20, 25 years in the Human Genome Project. So now we've learned a lot about the genetics of what makes an individual more or less at risk for prostate cancer. And so now we actually can put some of those even, you know, hundreds of genetic markers together to calculate a score, someone's genetic risk score for how likely or unlikely they are to develop prostate cancer in the future. And the Million Veteran Program, so which is, you know, a landmark achievement for VA research and has enrolled 1 million veterans plus across the country to voluntarily donate DNA specimens, complete surveys, answer questions about their medical history. Because of that, we now know a lot about the genetics of which men go on to get prostate cancer and which ones don't. So it was time for a clinical trial to see, all right, what if we could take men who are eligible for prostate cancer screening and prospectively, kind of proactively, give them their risk score, tell them whether they're low risk, average risk, or high risk for developing prostate cancer, and maybe that will help them and their doctors make more specific, tailored, personalized decisions about the right screening program for them. So hopefully and so that's the clinical trial that's ongoing now, and the hope is that the men who are high risk, based on their genetic score, get screening, get it regularly, ideally identify cases of prostate cancer early on so it can be treated before it becomes aggressive. And then maybe the low-risk men on the other side of the spectrum if they have one PSA value that's a little higher than normal, maybe take it with a little grain of salt, repeat it in a few months, see that it's normal, and they could actually avoid getting unnecessary biopsies. So really helping a more kind of moving from a one-size-fits-all approach to hopefully a more personalized risk prediction for these men.
Oh, I mean, that's kind of interesting. So what are some of the markers that you're looking for?
So all of these markers are in a person's DNA. So, you know, our DNA is the genetic code of our body that tells our body how to make proteins and cells and how they all come together. And we now know that there are hundreds of markers, each of them associated with a very tiny increased risk of prostate cancer. But if you add them up, and in fact, the score that we're using in this study has more than 600 different markers. Each of these one markers alone doesn't say, oh, yes, you will for sure get prostate cancer or not. But you can kind of add them up and essentially put someone on a bell curve of risk based on these markers. It's in many, many different genes across the genome. Some of them we don't fully understand why they are associated with prostate cancer, but we know that in big studies, when you look at cohorts of millions of people, those who have prostate cancer are more likely to carry this particular change than that one. And so we were able to add up a score like this. And as I mentioned, we developed it in the Million Veteran Program, but then partnered with other large studies that had biobanks of DNA, and they knew who developed prostate cancer in that group and who didn't, just to replicate the findings to make sure the score also predicted prostate cancer in those groups outside of the Million Veteran Program. And the score works there too. So that gave us more confidence to move forward with this clinical trial that we're now enrolling.
This stuff is really interesting, obviously to me and to any other male who happens to be listening out there. Is, you know, what are some of those markers that you were mentioning, the 600 that, you know, that our primary care person, after, you know, if we do our blood tests or our PSAs and they go, oh, okay, let's move on to this test.
Yeah. Well, you know, as a primary care doctor myself, I make sure I design kind of the tests and the information around them where the primary care doctor doesn't need to remember 600 different markers to order. Mm-hmm. So the way this is, it's described as a single genetic risk score, and they order that single test. It turns out you can do a DNA test from blood, but you can also do a DNA test from saliva, which makes it a lot easier. So for this clinical trial, if veterans are interested, they can go online, learn more, and we can send them a saliva kit to you know, spit in at home, mm-hmm. and it mails it back to us in the lab. So the primary care doctor doesn't need to keep 600 different genetic markers in their heads and know which ones mean what. What the end result is, the report will be based on all those markers: are you low risk, are you average risk, or are you high risk? And so it's, like I said, it's not a crystal ball. It is an additional risk factor that you may or may not have been aware of before getting the test. And hopefully that allows, because right now the current recommendation by the national guideline writers and that the VA follows is every man should have an individualized decision with their doctor about whether screening is right for them. But that's pretty hard, right? You know, like, yeah. So they would, first of all, you know, that's an in-depth conversation. And, you know, I don't know if you've been to your primary care doctor lately, but they're pretty busy and they have a lot of other things. They have a lot of other things to talk about in a pretty short visit. So having a real in-depth conversation about the risks and benefits of prostate cancer screening and whether it's right for you and really sussing out your risk factors, even though it's what we should be doing, a lot of times that happens. A lot of times it gets kind of short attention in an otherwise really busy primary care visit. So this helps that conversation along a little bit more. Okay, you're at high risk. You know, for you, I recommend screening. I strongly recommend it. It's a blood test called a PSA. Let's order that today. And for the low risk individuals, it could be, well, you know what, you're at low risk. You've told me today that here are the other 10 things you want to talk about. Let's talk about prostate cancer screening another time, because it's safe to put that off until your next visit. But this is, you know, it's not a crystal ball. It's not going to say you for sure will or you for sure won't. Mm-hmm. But it's a more precise risk factor than we otherwise have in clinical care. But the PCP doesn't need to know all 600 genetic markers. They can just order the test and they'll get a result that essentially says high, average, or low risk. And if they want to read kind of the fine print of how that was calculated, that's provided too. But the take-home message is we try to make that very clear about what that means.
Dr. Vassy, I've got a question. Being a nurse, and you just said something really critical for me, that the physicians are really busy, and you are very, in being in the VA system, I know how extremely busy you are. So a part of your team, do you have a nurse or a clinical nurse specialist or a PA that, my husband is getting these results? And you know, trust me, when you go for a mammogram and you're waiting for the results, there is high tension, you know? And is there anything that these men could do as they're going through the genomics and the studies, and we can't get to you to get reassured? Could I call in and ask to talk to a member of your team?
Yeah, well, so I should say the clinical trial that we're doing is still a research study. So absolutely, not only, so they can always call me and my team, which not only has me, but also has three genetic counselors on staff who actually are the ones who deliver the results when they get back. So we are including the primary care teams. We're letting them know that their patients are participating in this study, but we are doing, because it's a clinical trial, we are taking care of ordering the test, giving the results back to the patient and telling them what it means, and then also providing that information to the PCP. And then we're on standby if the PCP has follow-up questions for us about what that means. If this moves into more routine healthcare, I think we absolutely have to think about some of those kind of team-based models. Right now, a lot of the nurses I work with in primary care, they are having those first conversations. They're the ones who are ordering the fecal occult blood cards when they see that a person is due. We actually, as a part of this research, we're also doing some interviews with primary care doctors and their nurses. And right now they're all saying, I didn't learn anything about genetics in medical school or in nursing school. I don't know how to talk to my patients about this. I would need a lot of help. I'm not ready for this. So that's why we want to first do the clinical trial that shows, does this actually work? Does this improve outcomes? Does this actually help us identify high-risk men and get them appropriately screened? And if it does, then there's a lot of those implementation questions about how do we get doctors, patients, nurses, the whole team ready to bring this into routine care.
That's excellent. And I'm sure you're teaching the patients this and counseling them is the right word along the way. So I'm going to give you a question because it's really pertinent. We get the calls at Legal Help for Veterans, and veterans say, okay, I'm in this study, I'm doing this trial. Could I apply for, I have prostate cancer? And we're saying, okay, sure, we could put in a claim, we could help you. But then they sometimes say, I get a negative result, which is good. Do I still proceed with my claim? How would you encourage us out in the field to take care of these veterans? Should we put in a claim? Because you never know what's going to happen down the line. And that's what I guess as the nurse in me, I would tell them, yes, let's file a claim. And then in a year, you've got a year to touch it. If something else comes up, we've got an active claim and then we could proceed. So that's one question. So what is your advice?
Well, so if someone is diagnosed with prostate cancer inside, like in the setting of this clinical trial or outside, it's prostate cancer. So that, and they should file the claim as they would whether or not they had participated in this research study. So that's the, now if they got a, if their genetics said they were at high risk for prostate cancer, yes, and they get a screening test, it's normal. They get a PSA a year or two later, that's normal, then they don't have prostate cancer. But it might mean that in the future, they're, yes, at risk, they're still at risk for getting it. And so you wouldn't file a claim for prostate cancer unless you actually have been diagnosed with prostate cancer. You wouldn't file a claim for kind of being at risk for it. Right. We saw a lot of this, we still see a lot of this with Agent Orange, right? But yes, even yes, then, For prostate cancer being a presumptive condition with Agent Orange, you still have to have the diagnosis of prostate cancer before you file that claim for prostate cancer, even if you've been exposed to Agent Orange.
Wow. So my follow-up is, a veteran has prostate cancer or, you know, lung cancer, whatever. They go in for the surgery, and they've had, let's say there's follow-up or pre, I know a couple patients right now are having the radiation for a period of time. They do have prostate cancer. They're thinking the best way to treat it is do the radiation, and then after the radiation, get another CAT scan, and then go immediately into chemotherapy. So with one, he's at the latter part of the chemo, and they're seeing good results. Now, a claim has been filed because he has prostate cancer. But then we've seen some that have had the prostate removed, and then their claim is dropped from, say, 70 or 80 down to zero because they removed the prostate. Do you have any advice for that? It doesn't make sense to me.
So anytime patients start to ask me about the benefits and claims process, I have to make sure I connect them with the experts, because it's not me. The situation you described does not make sense to me, but I don't know the particulars of that particular patient.
Thank you so much, because I wasn't putting you on the spot, but this is what we see, and we go back and say, wait a minute, we're told that if I have breast cancer or lung cancer, you need a 5-year window. So why are you taking away my benefits after a year and a half?
Yeah, I do not know. I don't know the details.
That's a question. We have to find another source, I think, on that one. I've had some friends that have done that. We've been talking with Dr. Jason Vasey about the research he is doing into the genomes of prostate cancer, and it's kind of really interesting to me how this thing is working and how it's going to work. And you mentioned a little bit ago. About DNA testing?
Yes.
And that people could send you the samples. Could you tell us how we go about doing that?
Sure. So the study that we've been talking about is called the PROGRESS trial. And it is funded by the VA. And any veteran who is eligible for prostate cancer screening by our current guidelines is eligible for the study. So that currently means between the ages of 55 and 69, because that's right now the patients that we usually talk to about prostate cancer screening, and you cannot have previously had prostate cancer or a prostate biopsy. So if you've had your prostate taken out, but otherwise veterans who receive VA healthcare between the ages of 55 and 69 are eligible. And they can go directly online to learn more about the study. And yes. So that is at progress-study.org. So progress-study.org. And there they could read all about the study. There's a link to where this clinical trial is registered on clinicaltrials.gov, which is a requirement of clinical trials. There's the contact information for the VA IRB, so they can call the IRB and make sure we're a legitimate study and that we're real and that we are authorized to do this. And then they can read more step by step about what the process is. And the process is very easy. So they, through that website, if they're interested, there's a button that says Get Started. And that's where they answer a little bit about their history to confirm that, no, they've never had prostate cancer or a biopsy and that they're interested and eligible. There's a way of signing an informed consent document there through the website. And then if the veteran decides to enroll, after completing a survey, we mail to their home address a saliva kit. So we have now successfully enrolled. Our goal is to enroll 5,000 veterans into this trial. We've already enrolled more than 1,600 from every state and 3 U.S. territories. So we really can come to you. And then it takes about a month for the laboratory to process those results. And then, as I said, essentially it is we give kind of the fine print, nitty gritty details in some of the subsequent pages of the report, but the real headline on the first page of the report is, are you low, medium, or high risk for prostate cancer? And then what does that mean? And what are some talking points that you could take to your PCP about? And similarly, we have a version of that we also then send on to the primary care provider themselves too. And then that is, so certainly the trial does not require people to get MRIs or biopsies or surgeries or treatments or medications, because then we just observe what the veteran and their healthcare providers decide to do with that information over, on average, it's going to be about a 5-year study. So we're not requiring, if we tell you you're at high risk, you're not required to get prostate cancer screening. We hope that you and your doctor will have that discussion and maybe decide that you do want to proceed with prostate cancer screening, but it's not mandatory. And similarly, if we tell you you're at low risk and you say, I don't know, my neighbor had prostate cancer and I saw that it like didn't go well for him, I definitely still want to get screened, you're allowed to do that also. But we do think that this risk information will help veterans make more tailored decisions based on their own circumstances and risk levels and preferences.
Wow, this is just one example of what's going on at your local VA.
Well, it's national. Yeah, and it's national. I mean, yeah, we're a Boston-based team, but like I said, veterans across the country are eligible to participate in this, and we can send out a kit to you. We can get these results into your hands and into your primary care doctor's hands, wherever you're getting care across the U.S.
I think that's great.
Dr. Vassy, this is awesome what you're doing, and as I think we've said numerous times, the VA has the greatest and the best research departments around the country. Everything that you're analyzing and trying to diagnose and help our veterans, but you're also helping the normal citizen, because when you get these findings and they're being published, you're helping other primary physicians and surgeons take care of our patients. And so doesn't matter, thank you for the great care our veterans are getting, but we're helping all Americans with some of these disease processes. So thank you very much for what you're doing.
Well, it really is my privilege, you know, to be able to take care of veterans, and they help inform the research, and then the research I do helps me take better care of them. It really is just a privileged place to work.
One other comment, as a nurse, if step back and if the audience could see you, I love the emblem on your chest that says I care, because that's our mantra with nurses. You know, we go out there and, as my husband would say, we're caring and sharing all the time. So I love that emblem you have on. So
yes,
thank you.
I did. I know the audience can't see me, but I did decide to wear some VA swag today for the interview.
There you go. All right. That website again is progressstudy.org.
Progress-study. Yeah. So there's a hyphen in there. .org.
Okay.
That's right.
.org. Make sure that
Any
of you that are in that age group, I'm too old. But if you're in that age group, why not?
Yep. And if you prefer phone, we do have a toll-free number. So that's 833-607-5281. And that's also on the website, but that's 833-607-5281.
Wow. Well, this has been very, very informative, Dr. Vassy, and I greatly appreciate you taking your time out of a Sunday afternoon to come on and talk to us. If you have anything in the future that you want to share with our audience, please let us know, and we'd be more than happy to help out. This has been great.
Well, absolutely. Yeah, my pleasure. Yeah, and keep up the good work you're doing too.
Thank you. We'll get that word out together.
All right. Take care, everyone.
Thank you very much.
All right. Bye.
Great. We are going to take a quick break. When we come back on, we're going to be talking a little bit about what's going on in the world of VA benefits. So stick around. You're listening to Veterans Radio.
The Medal of Honor is the highest award for valor in combat given a member of the Armed Forces of the United States. There have been over 3,400 recipients of the nation's highest award. This is one of them. PSC Eugene Obregon pulled a fellow Marine to safety, then shielded his body with his own. Details after this.
If you have a VA claim denied by the Board of Veterans Appeals, contact Legal Help for Veterans at 1-800-693-4800. They're experts in handling cases before the U.S. Court of Appeals for Veterans Claims. Their number again, 1-800-693-4800.
While serving as an ammunition carrier of a machine gun squad that was temporarily pinned down by North Korean fire, Obregon observed a fellow Marine fall wounded. Armed only with a pistol, he unhesitatingly dashed from his covered position to the side of the casualty. Firing his pistol with one hand as he ran, he grabbed his comrade by the arm with the other hand and dragged him to the side of the road. Still under enemy fire, he was bandaging the man's wounds when hostile troops of approximately platoon strength began advancing toward his position. Quickly seizing the wounded Marine's carbine, he placed his own body as a shield in front of him and lay there firing accurately and effectively into the hostile group until he himself was fatally wounded by enemy machine gun fire. Obregon enabled his fellow Marines to rescue the wounded man and aided essentially in repelling the attack.
The Medal of Honor series is a production of Veterans Radio.
Military veterans touch everyone's life. I'm guessing right now you're thinking of a veteran, a close friend, relative. Maybe it's you. Even the toughest of us sometimes need help, but don't know where to turn for support. You don't need special training to help a veteran in your life. We can all help someone going through a difficult time. Learn how you can be there for veterans. Visit veteranscrisisline.net. veteranscrisisline.net. A message from the U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs.
And we're back here on Veterans Radio, and joining me right now on the line is our benefits expert, retired Brigadier General Carol Ann Faustone, Air Force nurse, and now strongly affiliated with Legal Help for Veterans. Well, Carol Ann, that was really interesting, I thought, that to be able to finally talk to a researcher from the VA. I just think it's so important that our veteran community especially realize what's going on.
Dale, that was excellent. I was so excited because, you know, this is what our monthly benefits program does. We try to get the word out there to our men and women who have served, to talk about what is out there for their health care. And for me, once again, as a nurse, that was great to hear, you know, the team approach, trying to diagnose and get things. I didn't ask Dr. Vassie this, but I think their goal with the genetics, the DNA testing, doing all of this is to get it early enough so that, you know, you're not that high risk anymore. You know, as we talked about friends, he's got a great prognosis because they caught it in stage one. They caught it so early. But, you know, when it gets to stage four and it's down the line, it's harder to then to go through the radiation and then the chemo and to get a good outcome. So, you know, when we hear things like this that are going on, it is great for our audience to share.
I certainly agree with that, and I'm hoping that we get an opportunity to talk to Dr. Fassi in the future, find out more about, and maybe he can refer us out to some other folks that we can get on. Let people know what's going on. And I thought that your question was really interesting, since we're kind of in a short portion of the benefits thing, is that if you do have prostate cancer, then you can get benefits. But as soon as they remove that, you're done. And the idea is that there's a five-year window on most cancers that I'm familiar with. So it doesn't seem to make any sense that they would just, no pun intended here, stop. Because it's not there anymore.
We do see it for lung cancer,
really?
Some of the breast cancers. Yes, you know, they remove part of the lobe and then you're out there with radiation and chemo, and then they say, okay, you're cured. Well, you haven't gone to that five-year period. And to be honest, I know some women with breast cancer that have gone beyond the five-year, and guess what?
It comes back.
And so, when that happens for our veterans, we tell them, let us know, because sometimes you get the letter before we do. And they said, they're reducing us. They're reducing mine from 70 to nothing or 100 to nothing. But if we get those results quickly, we hear from our veteran, we put in a stop reduction. Why are you doing this? So that you're not pulled out of the system. It's dramatic to go from 100% to zero.
Right.
And speaking of that, I don't know that we brought this up, but if you are being represented by whether Legal Help for Veterans, a county counselor, a VSO, and you're going in for surgery for that part of your claim that you have a disability, let's say a 20, a 40%, when you're going undergoing surgery and then the recovery period, whether it's rehab, or just that convalescent period, you should notify your representative, because there's forms we fill out, and you then go to 100% during surgery and your convalescent period. And so then they could drop you back down. You know, knees is a good example. And then our veterans will say, well, why was I dropped? Well, this is the convalescent period, the surgery convalescence. And we explain that. But sometimes they believe you're cured and they will reduce you totally. So it's always, and I'm not going to say it's going to happen in all the cases, but, you know, we're all individuals and it depends on the person that's reviewing our case.
Right.
So you've got to, veterans, communicate with your representative what's going on. And we try to keep our veterans really in tuned. Oh, we're going to apply you for convalescence, or we're going to do this. But we got to stay in touch with one another.
Yeah, I have heard that from many veteran friends who have had, you know, have had cancers that have been removed and so forth. And once they're diagnosed, they evidently it jumps right up to 100%, and then as soon as it's gone, it comes back down to zero, or, you know, right, or can't go lower than zero, but it seems like they do.
Yeah.
But I think they have to be aware of that. And I was not aware of the idea, which, if, you know, if I had to have a knee replacement or a hip replacement or something that's caused as a service-connected disability,
right, yes,
that they would bump that up temporarily while I'm going through the surgery, right, and my rehab.
Right. But you have to apply for it. It just doesn't happen, yeah, automatically. It's just like anything.
Yeah.
I can't read your mind. But if you don't apply for it, you know, if the veteran passes, the spouse has 1 year to get the substitute in. And that was what you know, all the rumor that, or the saying, when the veteran dies, your claim dies. Well, that's, mm-hmm, not true. If you handle it the right way, and you do the substitute within a year. Mm-hmm. So we find out a veteran dies. I had one in preparation this afternoon, got a call from the daughter. And so, you know, so there's ways to keep the claim going. And that's what I would encourage. And if you don't know, just call your representative and try to find out what's going on.
Wow. Absolutely. Absolutely. Oh, is there anything that you have, anything new that you have heard on the benefit side of what's going on? Is it taking longer, or I don't think they've cut back on personnel yet, but it sounds like they're going to.
Well, I think they're trying. I think I saw last week a note from the secretary of the VA, Secretary Collins, that they have reduced the amount of times in with claims development by like something like 26-27%. But please be excused, there might be errors. So we're being very cautious. We're being very cautious when we get an answer to make sure that everything equals. 1 + 1 = 2, not 4. And that, you know, you got the proper award. Some things are being deferred. This is interesting, because if you put in for 2 or 3 things, one might be deferred, but we don't want that deferred to get lost.
Right.
And so, you know, we peg it for a certain period of time that we will go back and say, what happened to this part of the claim? So, you know, there's many, I don't want to say tricks, but there are many things that we need to follow up on. We owe that to our veteran. And if the veteran has questions, we try to get them those answers. Good one, why did my disability rating drop in a certain area? Or when am I going to get an answer? But I would just say we're trying to be proactive and look at everything that comes in to make sure our questions got answered with your opinion that's being given to you.
Well, I think that's really important for people to realize. You know, we keep talking here, especially during our benefits program, about keeping in touch with your agent, whether it's, you know, whether it's a legal help for veterans or it's a your local VSO's county, you know, facility, whatever it is. But you need to keep in touch with them because there are changes going on. And there is some, you know, right now there's a little confusion out there. And I think the comment that he made, you know, there may be mistakes, is that maybe they're handling some of these claims a little bit too fast. And, you know, we have to go back and, you know, you, luckily we have people like you out there that can go back and find out what happened. And well, that's so important, I think. Don't give up.
Don't give up. But another area that we're seeing, it's interesting, an increased process of what's happening with exams, okay? So the other day we send you in for exam. I'll just use a simple one, your knees. So you're going in for your knees. You would expect to see an orthopedic surgeon, an area like that, that's going to evaluate your knees. So we get a response that it was reviewed by a primary care physician. And we're scratching our head to say, wait a minute. So, you know, it was the veteran who called us and said, I went in the room. I was maybe there 5 minutes. It didn't seem like what I answered. You know, I have pain. I can hardly walk. Walk for me. And okay, we're done. And, you know, is that an adequate exam? And so now I'm glad they reported it to us. You make a few calls, but then we wait for the decision. So if the decision comes back, well, we denied your knees, then it's our responsibility to look and see, okay, was it the appropriate physician or provider that examined that case? And so now we're going back and saying, we need another exam because we don't think this was the proper way to do it. So is that time consuming? Yes, Dale. We all have the recipe, who's supposed to examine what part of your bodies when you're going in. And I think those are some of the things that are a little frustrating. If you know you're supposed to have an oncologist, maybe to review some of the cancers, or a pulmonologist, we were talking lung earlier, then I don't think a primary care physician is going to be able to tell the correct story. So we're watching some of the stuff. And I saw the quote the other day that I think we all know. Let's do it right the first time. Mm-hmm. And I think that's where it gets into some frustration for our veterans.
Yeah. What a concept. Get it right the first time. We keep working on it. We keep working
yes,
on it.
Yes, we do. And, we're not giving up.
We greatly appreciate the effort that your organization and so many of these VSOs across the country are doing the same thing. They're really dedicated to what they are doing. And so we want to make sure that, you know, talk to your VSO out there. If you have a question, give them a call. That's what
county
they're there for.
County counselor too. VSOs, county counselors. My colleague wasn't able to be here today from Washtenaw County, but that's a great organization to call. And Dave is always there to help the veterans in the Washtenaw area. So great.
Okay. We got a minute to go. And thank you very much, Carol Ann, for being on the program today.
Thank you, Dale.
And I hope it was most informative to you out there as an audience. I wanted to just remind people that next week's program, Jim Fausone's a host. He's going to be talking to a United States Navy vet, David Brown, about going through the BUDS program in the Navy SEAL. I think that's going to be cool. And also Air Force veteran, MD, that was at the Pentagon on 9/11. These are two great stories. I encourage you to tune in next week, every Sunday, or if you listen to us in a podcast, you're going to be finding it there every week. So I'm really interested in hearing Jim's stories, and I get to go out west next week for the weekend. I'm going to California for my brother-in-law's 90th birthday. So we got 10 seconds to go. So next week, tune in. Until then, this is Dale Thronberry for all of us here at Veterans Radio, and you are dismissed.
God bless America, land that I love. Stand beside her and guide her through the night with a light from above. From the mountains to the prairies to the oceans white with foam, God bless America, my home sweet home. God bless America, my home sweet home.
God bless America,